You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
I'm with Karen Sibley, Vice President for Strategic Initiatives and Dean of the School of Professional Studies at Brown University. We've just heard you speak here at the Reinventing Higher Education Conference. Mm-hmm. One of the points that came up was gender representation in sort of senior management of higher education institutions. Mm-hmm. The point was made that the Ivy League is very good at this. I think five out of the eight are led by women. Yes. Across the US, not quite so pretty, 26% thereabouts, I think, led by women. And of course, if you look at any sort of staff from professorial level up, not the rank and file, if you like,
right,
you see an ever-declining percentage of women represented.
Right.
Why is that?
Very, very good question. I really think that it has to do with the way we have structured higher education, which, after all, has not actually caught up with the way in which the rest of the world is restructuring itself. So, for example, I was with some folks at Santander Bank yesterday, and they talked about introducing flexible work time, flexible models for people to be able to be at work, and they have a large childcare center, a large school, the best in the country, they describe it to be, for very young children, so they can enable women, young mothers, to be at work on their own terms. And those kinds of introductions benefit not just women, but all of the employees at Santander. So there's an interesting, remarkable, forward-thinking example of a very large corporation that's quite multinational.
So why is a corporation doing it? And,
yeah. Higher education has, in large degree, not emulated that kind of thoughtful engagement in order to enable diversity of all sorts, whether it's gender diversity or diversity of a multinational, multicultural population. Different people need different things and the flexibility to lead their lives effectively at different points in time throughout their lives. Mm. And so the faculty in higher education has been highly structured around seeking tenure. To enable yourself to get tenure, you have to spend ungodly numbers of hours on your research and your publication. And if you are a woman, a young woman who starts a young family, you often do not have all of those hours, or you make critically important life choices to spend some of the hours that you're waking or even sleeping engaging with the raising of a family. Now, men do this as well, but women are more highly expected to do it and maybe more highly drawn to it, and so that produces, over time, in a very rigidly structured tenure environment, fewer women and fewer members of diverse populations in the professoriate. Mm. And to go right to your ultimate question about leadership in higher education often taps its own faculty members to engage in those leadership roles, particularly at the presidential level. Mm. And so if fewer women and fewer minorities are in those roles by virtue of many things, but I think this rigid structure of, I mean, higher education looks the same now that it did 100 or 200 years ago in many, many aspects, right? Mm. So these rigid structures prevent enough people from being in the pipeline, and so you have fewer people to choose from and fewer people rising to those top-level positions. Mm. I do think it's changing, though. I do have hope, and I think higher education is also choosing different kinds of people for leadership roles, not just the faculty that have traditionally been the leaders in the past.
Mm. And you're, of course, in an Ivy League institution, and I felt, to an extent, that the response about Ivy League leaders to my question was used a little bit to mask a wider picture.
Yes.
It's like, oh, we're fine, yes. We've got five out of eight.
Right, but we're
behind the scenes at the Ivy League institutions, if you like, when you're in meetings, when you're in high-level discussions, do you find that representation, that successful sort of breaking of the glass ceiling, as it was almost painted to me earlier, do you find that carries through to those sort of high-level discussions with people more broadly involved in senior management?
More and more I'm seeing that, but still, it is, for example, seldom the case that you find a senior financial officer who is a woman. Now, at Brown, that's not the case. We actually do have a female senior financial officer, but that is a rare place to find women. And so, also, the deans of some of the major schools are often men. It would be interesting. I don't know these statistics, but you may. When we look at medical schools, when we look at engineering schools, do we find women in leadership roles in those places? I suspect not, and I suspect the data is worse than the data that you just provided on presidencies. So we have a long ways to go, and we still have some highly traditional expectations of where men will lead and where women will lead. Our School of Public Health has a woman in the leadership role. And I suspect that if you look at places like Columbia, for example, the School of Education has a woman in the leadership role. But schools of engineering, schools of medicine, schools of computer science and other kinds of technology, I suspect less so.
And final question, it was one again that was put to the panel that you weren't on, so it seems fair to put it to you too. Mm-hmm. Quotas, affirmative action. Mm. I realize that there are laws in the US that prevent people from doing it in some areas,
right,
that encourage,
right,
it in others. From a personal point of view,
right,
should universities be using these kind of techniques to balance things up?
No, I do not think universities or other organizations, and we just heard a very large corporate enterprise represented as saying no to quotas. I don't think quotas really advantage people. They're a way in which we reinforce some of our structures. We report data. And so quotas are convenient by way of the ability to report data and over time demonstrate that you're doing better, but I would question whether you're really doing better, because a quota by definition excludes some who might be extraordinarily talented and might be diverse in a different way. We heard a little bit about psychological and emotional diversity, which is extremely helpful in terms of building an important team and advantaging a corporation or a university. So quotas by definition exclude some, and I think they also have the opposite effect of enabling people to say to any individual, you're only here because of a quota. Mm-hmm. And so that digs that individual perhaps an even deeper hole than they might have had without a quota system. So I think a merit system is a far better way to enroll, but I think in enrolling people in a merit system, we have to attend to what kind of diversity we're seeking in order to create a population of people that will learn from each other.
Karen Sibley, thank you very much.
Very welcome. Glad to talk to you today.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.